From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. David Biancooley is my guest, a familiar voice to NPR listeners. David Biancooley is a contributor and sometimes host of Fresh Air with Terry Gross. He's also the founder of TVWorthWatching.com. His latest book tells the story of the legendary television series The Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, which lasted three seasons until it was abruptly ended by CBS. During its brief and shining run, The Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour was not only a funny comedy show with great guest stars, but also a showcase for some great musical performances, including The Who, The Beatles, Donovan, the original cast of Hair, Joan Baez, and Pete Seeger. At a time when television tried hard not to offend any possible customers for their sponsors' products, the Smothers Brothers had the nerve to try and say things, important things, that needed to be said in the era of the Vietnam War, Lyndon Johnson, and Richard Nixon. The book is called Dangerously Funny, The Uncensored Story of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. David Biancooley, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks a lot. That's a wonderful summation. Good for you.
Well, before we get to the Smothers Brothers, weigh in, if you would, on the NBC controversy over The Tonight Show. NBC has admitted that their experiment with a nightly Jay Leno show in primetime is a failure, and now they want to move Leno to 11:30 and bump Conan O'Brien, the new Tonight Show host, to midnight, and Conan has balked. What do you think?
Well, I loved the quote from Jeff Zucker, the guy who sort of engineered all of this at NBC, who said that, you know, at the end of the day, Jay Leno in primetime, you know, didn't work. You know, at sunrise, that didn't work. You know, it didn't work as a concept, and it certainly didn't work after people saw the first couple of shows. But this has just been an amazing series of horrifyingly bad decisions by NBC, decisions that go back years. So there's a certain amount of hubris, but, you know, I feel bad that, you know, Conan is caught up in it and everything else that's going on. But it looks like everything is over now except everybody dividing up the chips. Jay Leno is going to get The Tonight Show back. It's going to go back. I mean, it's going to stay where it is at 11:30. In about 2 weeks, Conan will be out of a job. And in prime time, as soon as we get to the other side of the Olympics on NBC, we'll have more Dateline NBCs and some of the 9 p.m. shows moved up to 10 so that NBC can put on more junk at 8.
I'm vying for my own reality show. I think they should have one.
Well, just stand in line and be patient. You know, there's only about 7 of us that don't have it yet.
Well, no, I wonder if there's some connection that we can draw between the Smothers Brothers and the Jay Leno situation. And what I'm thinking is that the Smothers Brothers were fired, you know, for a left-wing political stance. And in the last decade, especially, the media as a whole seems to have taken a step back, or at least a step to the right. It was the FCC controversy that began with Janet Jackson's Super Bowl nipple and
right.
Fox News and all that. And it's even been said that NPR took a little step to the right when Bob Edwards was replaced on Morning Edition. Now, Leno is a far more conservative choice than Conan or Letterman. And Saturday Night Live, that you mentioned a few times in your book, tempered its lampooning of Sarah Palin by including her in the sketch, which kind of offered her a bit of legitimacy the way Laugh-In boosted Richard Nixon's presidential run. So if television wants to be political today, a program has to sort of take that Rod Serling route of disguising politics in metaphor the way Battlestar Galactica did.
It's amazing. Tom makes this point. You know, I quoted him saying that he said people tell him if he had a show now, boy, he could really say stuff. And he says that's an illusion, you know, isn't it? He said we could talk about violence, we could talk about sex, we could use any language we wanted to. I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty close. But he said, but I don't see anything being particularly said. Now, as a TV critic, when I look at television, Saturday Night Live, even when it does something that's biting and on target, it's in late night, or the other people are on cable with Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, Bill Maher. In prime time, once Boston Legal left the air a couple of years ago, who is talking about anything? And Jay Leno had this platform 5 days a week. He could have done, you know, important jokes and important humor rather than just, you know, topical humor. You know, he's still making Bill Clinton jokes, but I mean,
You know, he used to be. Remember when he used to come on regular appearances on Letterman, where he would rant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he used to be a lot more political than he is now,
And a lot funnier. I mean, he was when he was the guest host for the Tonight Show. He was really funny. But as soon as he took over, you know, in order to be more liked and appeal to more people and embrace rather than offend the affiliates, you know, he sort of took all of his teeth out. And television has done that, just as you've said, more and more over the past 10 years. There's the thing about the 60s, what made the Smothers Brothers so meaningful is that no one around them was saying anything. It was all, you know, I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched and Flying Nun. You know, so for them to say anything at all made them stand out. It's almost the same, you know, 40 years later.
It really doesn't seem to have changed that much. I mean, when Boston Legal, you know, their almost shocking final episode where the two main characters, both men, get married.
Yes.
You know, that was pretty wild.
Well, good for you for being TV literate as well as bookshelf literate. I'm proud of you.
Thanks. But yeah, there's really, you know, the TV landscape isn't that much different than I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched.
I know, except that when the Smothers Brothers were watched, you know, 40 years ago, in most homes there was one TV set in the house and the whole family watched together, so the Smothers Brothers actually got in there by appealing to a couple of generations at once and were seen by 30, 35 million people a week. That's American Idol final numbers and
right.
Nothing else.
Right. I mean, nowadays, because, you know, television used to be a thing. When I was a kid and we watched the Smothers Brothers, you know, it kind of drew us together. Whereas
mm-hmm.
now television, I think, draws people apart. Everybody goes in their own room, watches their own TV, or watches...
Exactly. And TV, even with the Leno thing, is participating in its own demise. I think fewer people are watching what the participants in this late night war are saying on their shows than are saying afterwards either on the network websites or on YouTube. You know, television isn't even being watched as much anymore.
Right, not just the networks, but all television in general.
Right.
Because you can, you know, you can watch it in so many different forms. You know, when I was a kid and President Kennedy was assassinated, there was absolutely no way to get away from that. I mean, I was only a little boy, but I remember every second of it, and
yeah,
it was
too.
On TV. But I'm a middle school teacher, and my middle school students, who are 12 years old, they have absolutely no memory of September 11th, because it was very easy not to see it. I mean, you could have watched the Cartoon Network, or you could have continued to watch your DVD and not have been exposed to it in the way that, you know, in the days when we only had three television networks, you couldn't miss what was going on.
It's absolutely right, and I call that a cultural shared experience. And it used to be every couple of years there was something that sort of galvanized the entire country, either in terms of current events, which tended to be horrific, but not necessarily, like there was the moon landing, or it was the last episode of MASH, or the Who Shot JR episode of Dallas. I don't think we're going to get many of those anymore.
Don't forget my favorite, the last episode of The Fugitive.
Oh, yes.
That was a good one.
Which, you know, which took the record away from The Beatles on Ed Sullivan as the most viewed entertainment program.
I watched them both, didn't you?
I did too.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about your book. If you're just joining us, we're talking with David Bianculli, and his book is called Dangerously Funny, and it's the story, the uncensored story of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. I like how you stuck uncensored.
Well, for people who were there, they will know why, since so much of their work was censored. And I also wanted to make it clear that I was telling the whole story, but that it wasn't an authorized biography by any means. So
it's not really a biography of the Smothers Brothers. It's just a biography of that television series,
yes,
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. But in order to do that, I had to tell their story leading up to the show, and then I just do a fast wrap-up of a couple of things afterwards. But you're right. I'm interested, as a television critic, in the cultural things that were going on in those 3 years in the 60s when that show was on. But in order to build up for that, you have to, you know, I had to track their childhood, their nightclub years, their record albums, their first sitcom when Tom played an angel, and then finally, you know, very deeply into the show itself.
That angel show, as you point out in the book, fits neatly into the the period in which there were all these shows that dealt with the supernatural. There was my favorite Martian and Mr. Ed and...
Yeah, anything that, you know, yeah, talking, you know, and you tell, I teach TV history to, you know, college kids, and you tell them, oh, yeah, there was a talking horse, there was a flying nun, you know, and they think it was just this strange time. And it's like, yeah, but now you've got Flava Flav and Tila Tequila, you know, I'll see you and raise you.
Yeah, no, I do, you know, I mean, I think the thing about television is, you know, there was always a lot of crap, and there was always a lot of good stuff. You had to be... choosy.
Right.
I just think now, because there's so much more of everything, there's more crap.
Right. And, you know, I run this website, tvworthwatching.com, where there's different writers writing for it about quality TV, but the main center of it is the six things on TV tonight that are most worth watching. And even with, like, hundreds of channels, some nights
you
it's
can't find
taxing
them.
To get to six.
Well, there's a rerun of the Twilight Zone on the Sci-Fi Channel, so there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's sometimes, I mean, if it wasn't for Turner Classic Movies, I wouldn't make it some days.
Yeah, yeah, and that's sad, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, Bruce Springsteen had that song. You know, I can't remember.
Yeah, 57 channels and nothing on.
Now there's
now it's just a lot more channels. Yeah. But he's right.
Well, let me focus on a couple of things that I loved about the Smothers Brothers. We'll get to the political aspects in a minute, but I thought the show was remarkable for the music.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly remember the night that Donovan was on and sat on a cross-legged on the floor.
Right, the audience was throwing flowers at him. Oh, it was Woodstock before there was Woodstock. It was a concert in the round. Yeah, it's amazing what they did in terms of music. And when I went back and watched these shows for the first time in years. Now, the E! Network had repeated them in 91, but before that they hadn't been seen since the Smothers Brothers were thrown off the air in the 60s. But if you go back to those for the first time after having seen them, it's amazing, at least it was to me, how many of the musical artists that I still revere I was introduced to by that program.
And the music, those musical segments really hold up. You mentioned in the book the Bobby Gentry appearance where she sang mm-hmm. Ode to Billy Joe. And she's so great there with that little guitar and her little mini skirt that she's wearing.
So you've gone back and seen the DVDs?
Yeah, I was watching that on the new season 2 that came out not that long ago.
Oh, listen to you. I am so impressed by you.
Well, of course, I remember the show well.
Yeah, but what was it like for you to see those?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I did catch them when they were on E!
Mm-hmm.
I was really, in fact, I taped them all. I was still looking forward to seeing them again. And I think one of the things that struck me was, and I think this is true with Laugh-In also, they were really funny to me then, and not quite as funny. I don't think the humor holds up as well.
Right.
And I don't think that's true with every comedy TV show. I think the humor on the Jack Benny Show, you know, and on Bilko is just as funny as it was then. But Smothers Brothers and Laugh-In were both so topical, I think, that they're just not quite as funny as they were. Now, I talked to a guy recently who wrote a book about Laugh-In, and he, in his book, said that he didn't think the Smothers Brothers would have continued much longer even if they hadn't been canceled, because he thought that their humor had run its course. Whereas I think your book takes the point of view that they would have gone on for 11 or 12 years like Carol Burnett. What do you think?
Well, I think that even if they would have, they were starting to lose audience in the final season, because in the first 2 years, the reason that they became such a surprise and instant success was because they did successfully straddle generations during the generation gap. So you had Kate Smith and Simon and Garfunkel on the same show, or you had Mickey Rooney and Betty Davis and The Who, and interacting, not just build in the same hour like you would with Ed Sullivan.
Right, right.
But
right.
In the final season, that's when they were having that, like, Donovan in the Round concert, and they were inviting the cast of Hair on and doing more and more things that were aimed at the young generation that Tom wanted to reach and so identified with. So maybe they only lost like 4 or 5 million viewers. They were still in the top, you know, 20 or 30, near the top 25 when they were fired. But they were sliding downward, so I don't know if they would have kept going for 11 years, but I would have loved to have seen them ride out the 60s and, you know, with the sort of clout that they had and the guests that they had and the connections that they had. You know, when you can get a Beatle to come on and be a surprise guest on your show without any billing, that's pretty cool.
Tommy also has a special guest, too, and he'd like to introduce him right now.
That's right, I have a Beatle.
Yeah, but it's not the kind of Beatle you would expect it to be. It's the kind of Beatle that you, I think you hoped it would be. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. George Harrison. Do you have something important?
Something very important to say on American television.
You know, we don't have opportunity of saying anything important because it's American television. Every time you say something and try to say something important, they
cue the lines. Well, whether you can say it or not, keep trying to say it.
That's what's important.
You get that? Yeah. That is very important. Cue. Just a minute.
Wait a second.
Okay, cue the clap now.
Well, now, Laugh-In definitely overstayed its welcome. I think it lasted maybe 3 or 4 years more than it should have. I think it was on for 6 seasons or something. And when you try to do something that's so immediate and so, revolutionary, it pretty quickly becomes no longer revolutionary because the shock of the new does not last forever. In your book, you talk about Tommy Smothers' frustration when Laugh-In came on that was a direction he had wanted the show to go earlier, but couldn't get directors to see it his way.
Yeah, he couldn't get the editing to go fast enough for comedy blackouts. There were certain shows where they ended with these finales that were 10, 11 minutes long, and they were nothing but blackouts based around a particular subject, but they didn't have that fast, fast, fast Laugh-In pace. And when Laugh-In premiered, you know, Tom was looking at it and pointed to the screen with some friends that, there, that's what I'm talking about. That's what's been in my head this whole time. But, you know, even so, it's so weird, that period of the late 60s, because the Smothers Brothers were constantly shot at for trying to say anything at all. Then Laugh-In gets away with a lot by saying it very quickly and saying things about both sides. And then the same network president at CBS that came in and fired the Smothers Brothers within a couple of years puts on All in the Family to try to get the audience that the Smothers Brothers had proven were there. It just makes no sense. But a lot about the 60s makes no sense when you actually stand back and look at it.
There is something kind of magical about that period of time. I mean, when you think that all of the Beatles recordings that we know were all recorded between 1962 and 1969,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time that the Beatles had that incredible arc of their music, which included Hey Jude on the Smothers Brothers, also the Jefferson Airplane and the Who and the Birds and Bob Dylan and all that stuff was happening all at the same time, and plus the production code in movies was breaking down, and we saw The Graduate and Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, it was such a rich period of time, whereas you look back on the last 10 years, it's hard to see how could 10 years have been so volatile and had so much happen.
Yeah, it's one of the things, this is one of the things that I think I learned from teaching. I know you're supposed to teach when you teach, but one of the things that I learned, just what when you talk about teaching middle school and how little the kids may have been exposed to even in their own lifetime. It's the same with 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds, and you realize, oh, they really, there's a lot of subjects they don't know anything. And so in writing the book, I thought, unless it's only going to be read by 50-year-olds and up, people who saw the show the first time and really loved it, I had better at least make it readable as a story, and also try to bring the 60s back to life. So I try to say, at this particular point, when the Smothers Brothers are doing this, you know, here's the movies, here's what's going on TV, here's what's going on in politics. You know, it pains me to have to explain the differences between, you know, Bobby Kennedy, you know, and Jack Kennedy, but you have to.
Sadly. Well, We're speaking with David Bianculli, and his book is called Dangerously Funny. And let's just take a second and pay tribute to the design of the book. You capture the Tiffany lamp logo of the Smothers Brothers on the dust cover of the book. The photo section mimics their lettering and so forth. I mean, it's really a nice tribute to them.
Yeah, I'm thrilled by the design of the cover, and I take no credit for suggesting it. This is the first one that came down the pike, and I said, "Oh, absolutely, that's it. It's just a. If you remember the show, if you see the cover of this book, you will smile instantly. It's got the bass drum, it's got the Smothers Brothers lettering, it's got the two of them as young men, and it's got all those Tiffany things. And then to get the photos that I used for the show, most of them, I went deep into the CBS archives and these dusty, unopened boxes from 40 years ago to look at negatives and say, oh, that's what I want. I want Jim Morrison in rehearsal, you know, something that's never been seen before, that sort of stuff. It was fun.
There were a few performers that rose out of the Smothers Brothers to become national, international stars, or at least national. And Pat Paulson was sort of the first big one, and he even had his own special sort of a spin-off of the Smothers Brothers when he ran for president.
Mm-hmm.
And then he even had his own short-lived comedy half hour.
Yeah, the great thing, he ran for president every 4 years, just about,
yeah.
And just kept that. It's such a great Andy Kaufman kind of idea, and it was so brilliant in 68. He was doing then what Jon Stewart's doing now in terms of skewering the media and politics and politicians all at the same time, doing it brilliantly. But in 2008, on his website, his son and his widow kept up the joke.
They ran him for president, even though
he's deceased. Ran him for president in 2008. Here's my two favorite slogans from the most recent campaign.
Mm-hmm.
If I can remember them both. One of them is dead man running, and the other one is thinking inside the box. I mean,
I'm sure he would have appreciated
that's
that.
That's funny to me.
The time has come to quit around and talk about censorship. We of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour have had our share of censorship problems, but we are not against censorship, because we realize there is always the danger of something being said. Many people feel that the censorship is a violation of freedom of speech. Bull feathers.
And there was also Lee French, Share a Little Tea with Goldie. She was his...
Right, she was like Martha Stewart on acid.
Dick Smothers again. Oh, you sure have a weird way of hanging out, man.
I guess so. You seem to be doing a little painting.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm redecorating. Isn't it groovy? Wow, love all over the place. Don't you just feel it? It's really groovy.
I sure do.
Oh, yeah. What? You want to hear something really weird that happened this morning?
Yeah, what?
A dove flew into my kitchen. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow, then a hawk flew in and ate it. Well, I guess there's a moral there somewhere, huh?
Hey, Goldie, what did you do with the hawk?
Oh, I ate it.
Well, I don't know about that, you know.
Yeah, that's the trouble with you older people. You never know about that.
Wait a minute. How can you call me old? I'm only 29.
29?
That's right.
Wow, do you use a cane?
What?
Do you use a cane?
I can hear you. Now, you just cut that out, Goldie. I think we'd better get along with the question.
Wow, groovy.
Okay, respect your elders.
Yes, sir.
Goldie, now, if the United States decided to expand its territory, are you listening now?
Oh, right. I'm right with
you.
Okay.
What do you think would make a good 51st state?
Oh, Vietnam.
Vietnam? Now, we wouldn't annex Vietnam to the United States.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. It's all bombed and burned out and anything. It wouldn't fit in Lady Bird's beautification project. Yeah.
Oh,
I got a better idea for a 51st state.
Okay.
Africa.
Africa? But Africa's an entire continent. It's bigger than the United States. Now, we wouldn't make that a state.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Besides that, we couldn't say go back where you came from.
Is she still around? Did you interview her for the book?
She's still around. I actually pulled extant interviews with her. I did not. There's a couple of people that I didn't interview specifically for the book, because when they were talked to for the E! Wraparound in 91, they were interviewed so extensively about the exact points, not for what went on the air, but for what was shot in terms of the raw footage, and I got access to all of those. So in a couple of cases, I used those as well as other things. But other people that came from that whole period, of course, Mason Williams, who was the head writer.
Right. Classical, you know, gas.
Yeah, he was amazing. I actually sat with him and his then wife, and we watched all the Smothers Brothers shows together.
Wow.
That he had been in. I mean, that's, you know, Tom gave me more than anybody did in terms of time, and Dick did, but Mason was right up there.
So were the Smothers Brothers pleased with your book?
I'll find out next week. They're being inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Which Hall of Fame? The television?
The Emmy Hall of Fame.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's on that's on the 20th.
That was a wonderful moment in last year's Emmy Awards when Steve Martin presented. He said, this year, in an effort to waste time,
yeah,
we're presenting Tommy Smothers with the award that he didn't get because he didn't include his name as one of the writers when they won their Emmys.
Right, because his name was so political back then, he thought that a lot of the conservative members of the Academy would penalize the show just because he was one of the writers. But if he kept his name off, they had a chance to win, and they did win, but he didn't get to. So he didn't get to go up there after he'd been fired and have that great moment. The other writers went up instead, but he was able to go up 40 years later.
That was an incredible moment that back then that the show had been canceled or fired, as Tommy insists, and then they won the Emmy after that, right?
Yeah, it was quite a vindication. And Lorne Michaels, who was one of the of Saturday Night Live, who was a writer on Laugh-In at the time, said if we were going to lose to anybody, those were the only people to lose to.
Now, was there any effort to revive the show right then? I know later it was revived, but not very successfully.
Because actually Tom thought that they would be picked up by another network right away, but they weren't. And one of the problems was that Tom and Dick were going to sue CBS for what they saw as breach of contract, and they won that lawsuit. The lawsuit took 3 years, and you can only imagine in those intervening years, there's only three networks, and the other two aren't particularly interested in hiring somebody that's suing their previous employer.
A local television station in Los Angeles did air the unaired episode a couple of months later.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember seeing it then and thinking...
Yeah, Tom actually offered it free to as sort of an individual syndication deal, as long as they would show the next thing that he was planning, which he ended up never even offering. So stations around the country did get to show it, and the Republic did not crumble.
Well, it's kind of amazing that such a fuss was made, and when you watch the shows now, because it does seem pretty tame.
Mm-hmm.
It was certainly history making at the time, and you've captured it amazingly well in your wonderful book. The author is David Bianculli, and the book is Dangerously Funny: The Uncensored Story of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. David Bianculli, thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so impressed with your research and knowledge. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thanks.
That's all the time we have for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf, and I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back again next time for another great show. I want to thank Mr. David Bianculli for being our guest this week, and his book is called Dangerously Funny: The Uncensored Story of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. You can also check out David Bianculli's wonderful website. It's called tvworthwatching.com. I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. Check us out on our podcast page, KUSP.org, or find us on Facebook and iTunes. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.